Welcome to the AFP Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Friday, December 9th, 2022. This is the 29th edition of the AFP Report, a podcast series where I will be interviewing reporters and contributors to American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, as well as other special guests. Please consider subscribing to American Free Press if you are not already. Subscription details can be found at AmericanFreePress.net. Today, I am joined by Phil Giraldi, one of America's leading foreign policy experts and a longtime contributor to American Free Press. All right, Phil Giraldi, welcome back to the program, sir. How are you today?
I'm fine, John. It's good to be back with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Last time you were on, I think it was back in August, and we talked about Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, a very provocative move. Today, we're going to be talking about some related topics, but before we get started, I just wanted to mention that we just finalized issue 51 and 52 of American Free Press. It has been sent off to the printer, and it will be mailed out to all of our subscribers early next week. And you, of course, are a longtime contributor to the newspaper, and I know you also write for the UNS Review, which is one of the top alternative media outlets on the internet, and I follow your work closely there. That website is uns.com, and I also want to mention I would encourage all of our listeners to consider subscribing to American Free Press if they are not already. Our website is AmericanFreePress.net, and you can find subscription details there. It truly is America's last real newspaper. It is still a print publication that you can have mailed directly to your home, which is very rare these days. So I just wanted to mention that before we get started. Now, you are one of America's leading foreign policy experts and geopolitical analysts. And today I want to start off by discussing your most recent article published in American Free Press dealing with the spy war or the intelligence war playing out between the West and Russia, especially since the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February. There has been some major conflicts between the West and Russia for years now, it seems like anyways, especially with the whole Russiagate hoax, which definitely exacerbated tensions in recent years between the two countries. And to get started, I just want to briefly read an excerpt at the very beginning of your article where you write here, the CIA and Britain's intelligence services are known to be working assiduously to collect information that suggests vulnerabilities in the Russian offensive capabilities while also seeking to identify those individuals who do not support President Putin's war effort. The activities of spies and the agents that they direct can be considered a clandestine war that is being waged parallel to the fighting taking place on the ground. And I think that was an excellent way of putting it, sort of summarizing this intelligence war, spy war taking place between the two countries. So to get started, can you kind of just expand on this for us a little bit? And how is this clandestine war against Russia being waged by the West? How is it actually being carried out?
Well, I think the evidence is that the United States and Britain acting together basically have upped the level of what one might refer to as an intelligence war with the Russians. Now, a lot of this is propaganda. I mean, that has to be the first thing to bear in mind, that anything coming out of MI5 or CIA or by the National Intelligence Director or, any one of the security people that are around the White House and likewise in London is going to be kind of shaped in a direction that those governments want you to think is true. So what they're doing here is, by virtue of a couple articles that have appeared lately, suggesting that we're winning this war, that we're expelling all these Russian spies, and we're running successful operations to recruit Russian diplomats and Russian spies who are out in the community, and this sort of thing. It's in itself a propaganda pitch. And in my article, I basically cast some doubts upon what is being asserted and the mechanisms that they're using to actually conduct this war.
Right. Yeah. So you're basically arguing that it's actually not as successful as the people running like MI5, for example, or the CIA would have the public believe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, one of the points I make early on, having been a spy in those overseas environments and stuff like that, is that boasting that we've kicked out hundreds of Russian spies from Western Europe and from other places and stuff like that is an empty boast, because these things are reciprocal. When you kick out a Russian spy, or you refuse to accept a Russian diplomat saying that he's a spy, we don't want him in our country, the Russians and their allies do exactly the same thing to our spies. In other words, they would grab someone like me, who was high enough profile for them to know that I was probably an intelligence officer, and they would kick me out next. So that reduces our capabilities to collect information overseas, because for every one of them kicked out, they're kicking out one of us.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and right off the bat, you talk about the role of like disinformation and just the role of the media in general. And that's something I definitely want to pick up on. But you have a very interesting quote that I've seen all over the internet from Bill Casey, who was the FBI director appointed by President Ronald Reagan, I believe, in the early 80s. And the quote goes something like this: "We'll know our disinformation campaign or disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." And yeah, that's a very powerful and eloquent and probably very accurate quote, at least the substance of it. It's kind of hard to pin down and cite or source exactly where that quote came from. I have no doubt that a CIA director would say something like this. But I think it does pretty much accurately reflect the policy of Western intelligence agencies, right?
Yeah, in a sense it does. And a sense is what they're seeking is to have that capability. I mean, that it doesn't mean they're going to be exercising it all the time or in every situation, but they want to have that capability. I know Casey, or I knew Casey, he's deceased. I worked in the Rome station shortly after he was appointed and got to know him somewhat. There are a number of people who would confirm that quote or a version of it is precisely what he did say. As I suggest in my article, he was a kind of clever guy. I rather suspect that he might have been actually not exactly joking, but he might have been saying, "Look, guys, this is kind of where we're going." It's quite possible that this was kind of a comment that was either serious or tongue-in-cheek.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, picking up on that, I want to ask you, you know, what role does the mass media and just the dissemination of information in general play in all this? I mean, it seems to me that the media has played a key role in this information war against Russia from the very beginning of this conflict. I mean, there have been all sorts of, you know, flat out fake stories that have come out, especially stories that demonize Russia and that accuse the Russians of committing atrocities, of bombing civilian centers and deliberately targeting civilian infrastructure, of committing massacres and just other atrocities in general. On the other hand, at the same time, the Ukrainians and especially their political leadership in the form of their Jewish president, Zelensky, who was, I don't know if you saw, but he was recently just declared Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And he's been a darling of the Western political and media establishment since his conflict began. But the Ukrainians in general have been portrayed as these valiant, like, heroes standing up to the evil Russians who are out to conquer and subdue Ukraine and turn the country into, like, a vassal state or something. I mean, none of this is true, of course. But that's sort of the prevailing narrative that has been espoused by the Western media. And we continue to see this play out in headlines day after day. It's maybe not as blatant as it once was. I mean, I remember back in like March and April, every other week there was a story about an alleged massacre carried out by the Russians, which all of which turned out to be totally fraudulent. And in many cases, if there was an actual massacre or atrocity that took place, it was actually committed by the Ukrainian side or forces allied to the Ukrainian regime. So it was almost like a total inversion of what actually happened. So I know I just said a lot right there, but can you maybe comment on this aspect of the Psy War, the role that the media has played in all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. My war, which I was drafted for, was Vietnam. And if you recall back then, the media was, pretty much divided on that war. There was a lot of criticism coming out of the major mainstream media about what was going on with the war and how it was being conducted. And eventually, this led to the U.S. withdrawal from the war. So there was a media that existed then that was willing to go to bat on positions that were not supported by the government. This all kind of changed in 2001. With the war on terror, with the war against Iraq. Again, if you think back, you would realize that Iraq was kind of the breaking point on all this kind of stuff. This was a totally unjustified war that was built on a whole tissue of lies, and the media was all for it. The media went crazy for it. And there were more lies than anyone in the United States had previously witnessed coming out of government and out of the media. And now I would argue that this is even worse. This has been a media that has been unflinching in playing every lie that's been given to them, fed to them by the national security state. And they've replayed them, and they've elaborated on them. They've made stuff up. And so this is probably the worst thing we as Americans, in terms of our relationship with the media, has ever been. And I don't see it necessarily getting any better, because we, in addition to having just this kind of consensus about war, we also have a media that's tied hand and foot pretty much with the Democratic Party, which has its future and its security tied in closely to what they can convince the American people is true.
Yeah, that's a very good point about the war in Iraq, and that was definitely on display. I mean, you had the entire media apparatus totally in support of going to war and literally peddling government lies. I mean, from the New York Times to Fox News, I mean, it transcended the political spectrum, and that's definitely been the case with the situation with Russia. I mean, you could turn on CNN, Fox News, NPR, any mainstream corporate news outlet, and even a lot of alternative media won't even give you the real story about what's going on in Ukraine. So yeah, I think you're definitely right about that, and that sort of media like monopoly that they are marching in lockstep in unison with the regime is a very powerful force. And I mean, you simply just will not get truthful and honest analysis from any mainstream outlet anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the situation we're in right now. And we really have to go to the American Free Press or to sites like UNS.com, an anti-war maybe to a certain extent, although they pull their punches, to get any kind of truth in terms of what's going on. There are a number of people that I would trust in terms of what they're saying about Ukraine, but they're few and far between.
Right. And we've seen, especially with this situation with Russia and Ukraine, people just being outright censored on social media, on independent media platforms, just being totally, shut down and basically for disseminating information that runs contrary to what the U.S. government is saying.
Yeah, absolutely. For example, a lot of the stuff I write, I also feature on Facebook in a watered down version, because they have censors that basically are not willing to put up with any direct opposition to what's going on with the government and the media. So I'll put a piece, rewrite it a little bit and put it on Facebook. But I find now invariably my pieces are what they call shadowed, which means that they are restricted, where my normal, shall we say, consumer base is restricted, and the people that would normally see the stuff I write don't see it. So that's a trick they use, and it's used by all of the social media.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's been going on for a very long time. Yeah, you're right. You know, I was listening to an interview with Ray McGovern, who I believe also worked for the CIA, correct?
That's correct. He was an analyst, yeah.
Yeah, and he was sort of going over the Russiagate situation and just the current situation in Ukraine and the Russian invasion, the war taking place. And it's just incredible almost how politicized not only like American intelligence has become, but also law enforcement, the justice system. And I know, I mean, you've worked at very high levels with people in the CIA, in the State Department, America's diplomatic corps. Are there any nonpartisan, like really unbiased, objective professionals left in American intelligence agencies or in our diplomatic corps? Or are these people all basically political hacks at this point?
Well, the simple answer is that there are two State Departments and two CIAs and two FBIs. There is the working level where people tend to do what they think is an honest job and do it as well as they can. And then the reporting that they write goes up to a higher level. And as you move higher and higher up the ladder, you find that these people who are honest, hard workers don't get promoted. And it's the people who buy into the whatever the narrative drama that is being put out by the White House and those associated with the White House and the media. Those are the ones that rise to the top. I can recall for you for the Iraq War, when we had CIA Director George Tenet, who never worked as an intelligence officer, but came up through Congress to become director of CIA. And there he was sitting in the United Nations behind Colin Powell and nodding his head as Powell was coming out with lie after lie after lie to justify the invasion of Iraq. Those are the kind of people who get promoted.
Right. So the very highest levels are basically the political hacks, the people that are going to go along with the program and not ask any questions, they're going to toe the line. They're going to toe what the regime is expecting of them.
That's right. And they exist in all these organizations. And do you think Tony Blinken, when he sits down with Joe Biden, do you think there's any difference of view, or do you think Tony Blinken is actually telling him what's really going on?
Yeah.
No, it won't happen.
Well, so what about the Russians? I mean, what is your assessment of the way these things are done in Russia, the way intelligence is collected, this sort of spy war? Of course, they're going to have good intelligence sources in Ukraine, in Eastern Europe, you know, countries that they have longstanding historic ties to, and probably also in many EU countries, I would imagine. But what about America? I mean, what is their sort of spy war against America look like?
Well, that's the interesting story. That's the big question. It's being portrayed consistently by the Democrats, primarily, that Russia is involved in all kinds of what we call covert actions. To basically shift opinion in the United States, to shape opinion in its favor, and to influence our elections. See, this is the Hillary Clinton argument.
This is the Russiagate argument, yeah.
Right, absolutely. And this persists. I mean, there's still, I think it was just a couple of weeks ago that one of the cabinet ministers around Biden said that the Russians are actively interfering in the electoral process coming up in 2024, so that, you know, they're looking ahead and projecting this. But I feel that if you look at the record, there is no evidence that the Russians have been successful. If they have done all these things, which they may or may not have, and they have not influenced any elections, they have not influenced anything. And here we have people like George Soros, who are funneling in millions of dollars to corrupt our electoral process, and he gets away with it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was a big theme that we covered in American Free Press, was just the role of money in these elections, which every single election cycle, it seems to only increase, where you have these billionaires just throwing around incredible sums of money to buy politicians, to influence elections. It's just really an outrage, and yet all we hear about is how sacred our democracy is and how we're fighting for democracy in Ukraine, when it's literally just a total scam with a bunch of corrupt oligarchs running the show.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the comedy routine that one might cite if you see Zelensky on the cover of Time magazine. I mean, this is one of the most corrupted governments in the world. The whole system there is corrupt. They've turned on the Russian Orthodox Church and are shutting it down. They've banned all opposition parties. They've banned opposition media. People go to jail for saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. This is a corruption personified.
Yes, absolutely. And getting back to Zelensky, we got to talk about this a little bit more because it was just announced that he was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And I'm looking at an article here. I caught this headline in the Jewish Telegraph Agency. Volodymyr Zelensky named Time's Person of the Year. And the article says here, Volodymyr Zelensky, the Jewish president of Ukraine, was named Time's Person of the Year on Wednesday for galvanizing the world in a way we haven't seen in decades, in the words of the magazine's editor-in-chief. Now, is he truly galvanizing the world, or is the media running with that narrative and propping this guy up everywhere we look? I mean, he's been just – it's been like one nonstop tour where he's going to all these capitals in Europe. He's coming to D.C. – speaking in front of Congress in D.C., demanding more money, you know, demanding that we get involved in the conflict on behalf of Ukraine against Russia. I mean, it's incredible the way the media has spun this man, who is a totally corrupt, degenerate comedian. I mean, from what I understand, he really didn't even have much of a political career prior to, you know, getting involved in politics and running for president. He was propped up by all of these corrupt oligarchs in Ukraine. And, you know, that's how he basically won the election. I think he was elected, what, in 2019, if I'm not mistaken, or 2020? He's only been president for a couple of years. It's just, I mean, the PR involved with this guy is really incredible. And it's so bad that they're literally putting him in front of like green screens and producing these like fake, press releases essentially and speeches that he's giving. And it's just incredible the propaganda involved in all of this.
Yeah. And I would add that the Ukrainian oligarchs who got him elected president were also Jewish.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's that aspect to the story, which, of course, no one is allowed to talk about. But anyway, the fact is that my real fear is that this guy has an agenda. He's surrounded by U.S. Neocons, which is another thing that's not reported at all in the media, who are giving him advice. And he gets advice from his Hollywood actors who come over for photo ops and that sort of thing. But the fact is, this guy is willing to do anything to take any risk in an effort to draw the United States directly into this war against Russia, which is not in our interest at all. And this incident in Poland recently, where the missile fired by the Ukrainians went in the wrong direction and killed two Polish farmers, was insistently pushed by Zelensky as being a Russian attack on a NATO member, and he demanded that NATO retaliate. And he is now firing drones into Russia, which are going to definitely produce some kind of reaction from Russia, and he's hoping it will be the kind of reaction which he can exploit. So this is what this guy is up to. He's up to World War III.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody who thinks otherwise is dreaming.
Yeah, and I mean, that's been the strategy this entire time, is somehow provoke, either directly provoke the Americans, you know, in NATO essentially, to get involved on behalf of Ukraine, or to manufacture some sort of outrage, which we've seen with all these fake stories coming out over the past year, right? That's been a major part of this conflict. And I guess what are your thoughts on the current state of the war? I mean, it seems like the Russians more or less have the territory that they've conquered and are basically sitting on it, from what I understand. And this entire situation was totally, you know, avoidable, and it's been just instigated by the West at every opportunity, especially the neocons running America. I just saw it was a couple weeks ago, the president of the EU, what's her name? Von der Leyen, I believe. Ursula von der Leyen, yeah. She gave a speech where she openly admitted, and this has not been reported by mainstream news, but she sort of slipped in this speech and admitted that over 100,000 Ukrainian military men have been killed in this conflict over the course of the past year. Something like 20,000 civilians have been killed. And I mean, this is, you know, the people of the Donbass region have been being slaughtered by the Ukrainian regime since 2014, pretty much regularly. So this conflict, again, totally avoidable, totally instigated by the West, especially the neocons in the United States. And, you know, we're seeing hundreds of thousands of people die needlessly. This is just outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. This was an avoidable war. It was unnecessary. It could have been negotiated without any bloodshed. And it should have been negotiated without any bloodshed. But the United States chose to interfere in this relationship between Russia and Ukraine. And they started doing that back around 2009, but they really got into it when in 2014 they overthrew the existing government, which was basically pro-Russian, and eventually wound up replacing it with what we have now. And the point is that this is the United States is the guilty party in a lot of this stuff, as were the British. They really seem to want to create a crisis situation for reasons which to me are not at all clear. We get no benefit out of this.
They're certainly not in America's best interest, that's for sure.
And we could wind up with a nuclear war.
Isn't it amazing how literally the same exact people that were instigating the conflict and you know, were heavily involved in the Maidan coup in 2014 are the same exact people running the State Department under Joe Biden? Victoria Nuland, Anthony Blinken, Wendy Sherman. I mean, it's like this, literally the same exact criminals, the same exact Jewish neocons that were involved then are currently running American policy, you know, at the State Department.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And there's no getting around it. And there's also a large sprinkling of neocons elsewhere. Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, is both Jewish and a neocon. You know, it's just like it never seems to end. There are agendas playing out here that have nothing to do with the United States, nothing to do with our national security. And yet these things are playing out as if they are really important for the well-being of American people. American people are only getting grief out of this because of the energy crisis that is a result of this. And inflation, which, you know, you send little packages of $50 billion to Ukraine every time you turn around, that eventually is more than pocket change.
Yeah, absolutely. It is incredible the amount of money that has flown to Ukraine just this past year. I mean, there was tons of money going over to Ukraine, you know, really since 2014, probably even before that. You know, a lot of very shady, corrupt deals and you know, like behind the scenes political moves and stuff. But this past year has just been, I mean, truly eye-opening. I mean, I don't even know what the count is now. It's definitely in the billions. It might even be close to $1 trillion at this point. It's just totally out of control. I just saw a report that the Pentagon cannot account for like over 60% of its assets. So, I mean, the Pentagon doesn't even know where their money is or where their assets are. We're sending billions and almost $1 trillion over to Ukraine to fight this war. I just read earlier today that the U.S. House of Representatives passed overwhelmingly the largest national defense authorization bill, which basically sets the priorities for spending at the Pentagon. It's $858 billion next year for fiscal year 2023, which is actually $45 billion more than was even proposed by the Biden administration. So, I mean, this is a major problem throughout all levels of the federal government. It's not just the Biden White House, it's Congress. It's everybody is involved in this, just spending. I mean, where is this money even coming from, first of all? You know, this article I'm looking at in Reuters is claiming that some of it is going to go for a pay raise for our troops, 4.6% pay raise. But most of it is going to go for purchasing more weapons, ships, and other military hardware. And then, of course, there's major funding set aside for Ukraine as it fights, you know, Russia and also Taiwan. So it's like the United States is funding, you know, Taiwan and Ukraine in this like sort of proxy war against both Russia and China.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely true. We have more than 1,000 bases scattered around the world, military bases, and we're spending. The reality is we're talking about 840-something billion, but in reality they will be spending more than $1 trillion because a lot of these budgets are adjusted, and there are cost overruns, which are quite frequent apparently. So the whole thing is that, you know, it's a corrupt process that's going on. And another thing, there was an article 2 days ago where the Senate had voted on a bill which would have sent some basically accountants to Ukraine to find out where all the money was going. And guess what? The bill was defeated.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
there's no accountability. Nobody knows where all this money is going. I mean, there was I didn't really look too closely into it, but apparently a lot of the money involved in that whole FTX scandal with mm-hmm. that Sam Bankman-Fried, another Jew, by the way, a lot of that money was being funneled into Ukraine or laundered into Ukraine. So, I mean, there's so many scams and scandals taking place in Ukraine with all this money going to being transferred over there. It's totally out of control. I don't think anybody has a grasp on how much money is actually being funneled into this country, into this totally corrupt regime. I want to ask you one more question about the situation in Ukraine, and then I have one final topic to bring up before we wrap up. And that is, what is your assessment of the current conflict? I mean, do you see like Ukraine turning this around? Or, I mean, I just don't see how Ukraine is ever going to get this territory back. And frankly, I don't think they should at this point. I mean, they've been totally operating in bad faith. When Russia, in my view, if you look at it objectively, has been very fair and just trying to do the right thing and trying to resolve this situation in a peaceful manner. And they've just been slapped in the face every single time by Ukraine and by the neocons manipulating Ukraine in the West.
Yeah, well, my view is that I accept the fact that I'm not a military strategist beyond the sergeant E5 level that I left the Army as. But I do listen to people like Colonel Douglas McGregor, who are experts, and they believe the war is basically over. I mean, Ukraine has essentially played out its options, and the Russians never intended to take over Kiev or anything like that. They basically wanted to liberate the Donbass, create a land bridge over to the Crimea, and they have that. I think that's how this thing will eventually be settled, and Ukraine will have to make a decision not to ever apply to join NATO. And then, you know, this is probably where we should have been in the beginning, at least some of this stuff, and avoided all the bloodshed.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that they're going to try to drag this out for as long as possible, though. And they've even openly admitted this going back to the beginning of this conflict. You know, there were neocons writing in like the Washington Post, for example, how they wanted to drag this conflict out and like bleed Russia dry, essentially. You know, of course, Ukraine is going to suffer the most. I mean, as I mentioned, even the president of the EU is admitting that over 100,000 Ukrainian military men have already been killed in this conflict. I mean, how much longer can they sustain losses like that?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy situation. One final topic. I wrote an article for the newspaper, this most recent edition of the newspaper, highlighting the interview that Kanye West did with Alex Jones. I don't know if you caught that, but he basically almost single-handedly shattered the post-World War II political narrative surrounding Adolf Hitler and the Nazis and the alleged Jewish Holocaust. He was basically praising, not necessarily praising, but wasn't condemning Hitler, and was saying, you know, the Nazis did some good things too, and maybe what we've been told about the Holocaust isn't all factual. So it was a very, very sort of bizarre interview, but he did say a lot of very important things that, in my view, have really not been said publicly on a big platform like that ever. It's just kind of incredible that we have this rapper up there doing it. It was a really bizarre situation. I don't know if you have any comments on it or if you watched the interview, but I'm just curious if you have any comments.
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I read the account of it, of what he said, and so on and so forth. Yeah, he raised some interesting issues. I mean, if you talk to a real genuine European style historian who is an expert on the 20s and 30s in Europe post World War I, they will basically be somewhat ambivalent about what the Nazis started out as and what they accomplished and various things about them and about Hitler's leadership style. I remember many years ago in college having read Mein Kampf, Hitler's book, and it is an interesting book. And he understood a lot of European history, what was going on in sociological terms and that kind of stuff. He was a pretty smart dude.
Oh, and, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so anyway, the whole history of what is the cliche? History is written by the victors. And the victors have really done a job on the Germans in the between wars period and what the Second World War was all about. And of course, there's no bigger fiction than the standard accepted narrative of the Holocaust. That is not a purely political invention, but a political invention in the sense that it has been turned into a accepted narrative to obtain protection for the state of Israel and to make some of the things that people would rather not talk about, even today, in terms of what's going on in Palestine. It provides cover against that. So it's a story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a very weaponized narrative that has been used very effectively by Israel, by the organized international Jewish community on so many fronts. I mean, we could go on and on about it. I do just want to mention, in the interview, it was really astounding because, I mean, Alex Jones is not by any means sympathetic to Hitler or to the revisionist, perspective of World War II. And so it was really incredible to see him sit there and just make some of these statements. He said that Hitler has a lot of redeeming qualities and that every human being has something of value that they brought to the table, especially Hitler. And, made a number of other interesting comments. He said the Jewish media has made us feel like the Nazis and Hitler have never offered anything of value to the world. And I mean, yeah, just some really powerful statements. I mean, if you watch the interview, he was acting pretty bizarre and had this like face mask on that like totally covered his head. It was kind of a weird situation, but he did say a lot of important things. And I mean, things that totally, are totally contrary to the accepted post-World War II political narrative, which really is the bedrock of the entire world order at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost everything rests upon this narrative of World War II and Hitler being evil and nationalism in general being evil and, and leading to atrocities like the Holocaust. And, we can never question or criticize Jews or even point out what they're doing because, of course, that is hate and hate leads to a Holocaust and, mass murder. So, I mean, pretty much everything rests on this narrative and he's up there openly challenging, openly disputing it, which is a very positive development, despite how bizarre the entire thing was. So anyways, that'll be a story that I'm sure will continue to develop. I mean, Kanye West has been saying some very controversial things for the past couple months at this point, and I don't know if he's really going to slow down or shut up, which is a good thing in my view. So I just wanted to get your take. I know it's a kind of a controversial topic, but a very important story in my opinion.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, good for him, exactly. Yeah, I stand with Kanye. I support what he's saying. So, all right. Well, Phil, thanks, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me once again. We'll have to stay in touch and do this again in the future. Keep up the great work for American Free Press. And once again, you can also find your work over at The Uns Review, which is uns.com.